Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to the show. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson producing. Preds lose 2-1 last night to Winnipeg. We'll get back to that at some point today. Derek Mason going to join us coming up in about 30 minutes from now as Malcolm Turner made a very large statement yesterday, Vanderbilt Athletic Director, that Derek Mason will return in 2020 as the head coach. He must have obviously been listening to the show yesterday, Derek.
Yeah.
Because he came out and made a very forceful and powerful statement in support of his head football coach. And we'll have our thoughts on that coming up momentarily, and we'll talk to the coach coming up in about 30 minutes from now. Casey Alexander, as the Battle of the Boulevard takes place tonight, Lipscomb and Belmont coming up a little bit later on this evening. So we'll talk to Casey Alexander, Belmont head basketball coach, at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. You've got a little dissection of Nick Foles.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Few plays of Nick Foles in his return back for Jacksonville. It wasn't one of those great returns, like Nick Foles come back, dun 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 dun.
Yet he threw the ball 100 times.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it was dun 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 dun. Jaguars lose. Especially guy was.
Are you breaking down all 40-something throws?
Yeah, I'm breaking down all his throws. We're gonna do last hour with Nick Foles, like the Nick Foles hour. Straight Nick Foles.
Like the worst thing ever. Can I go home?
Fourth hour with Foles.
Adam Vingan in the final hour. But listen, I'm watching. So last night I'm watching the Preds on one TV. I got the two screens going. The rankings have already college football has already taken place. We obviously are a huge college football market. So there's no real change in the rankings last night. So again, we'll get to that. But there's nothing really new.
I think the surprise was 6 through 9.
And that's basically been the same every week of the rankings. So we'll get to that coming up. But I'm watching the rankings, and then the Preds come on. And then, you know, I'm following the Nashville SC, MLS expansion draft, which was a huge night for the club last night to celebrate sort of I think one of the first big benchmarks and tent poles of their MLS existence, because now they've got, you know, 7-8, they've tripled their roster in size, and now you can actually start to see the formation of the team to some degree. And then I'm watching Ja Morant on the other TV, because I am obsessed with Ja Morant, and as a lifelong diehard Grizzlies fan, of course, I am now. They were picked 15th in the Western Conference, like basically dead last by everybody. They were 5-7 or 5-8 coming into last night, and they lost to a garbage Golden State team who's terrible at home by like double digits, and that's a terrible look. It wasn't a good performance. But I'm watching all of these different sports, and what's hitting me is, why do they work? Why the Preds are so ingrained now in our culture in this city. And I don't know if the Titans ever figured out, even though they were so good when you played, Derek. You guys were so good. The stadium was packed, the city was abuzz. It doesn't, and maybe just 20 years of not being good has done this to them, but it doesn't feel as interwoven into the fabric of the community the way the Predators are now. And maybe it's just that recently they've been very good, and maybe that's the simplest answer to all of this. But I just was sitting there thinking, why is it that certain things resonate with certain cities and certain locations? Obviously, there are different demographics in Memphis than there are in Nashville, than there are in Atlanta, than there are in Wisconsin, right? So I know demographics play a large role in this. Age plays a large role in why soccer is successful. Young people like soccer. Young people don't like baseball. That's why I always wonder why people talk about baseball in this city. I am just fascinated with how and why a specific sport works in a specific city and others don't. And in large part, I look at the Preds and the Titans. And I know we've had this conversation a million times. But I don't understand why NFL football feels like it hasn't really truly entrenched itself in this market.
I mean, if you look at it, let's just take because I think everything everything is ebb and flow. I think every sport, everything in life has a season, and we've heard this, you know, countless of times. You know, everything has a season, a season for prosperity. A season for where you just, you know, you go through some hard times, a season where, you know, you're in a great relationship, you're not, whatever. I think life kind of goes through seasons.
Cupping season? Is that what they call it in New York?
Cupping season in the wintertime.
You don't know what this is?
In the wintertime.
Yeah, cuffing season.
Or whatnot. It's like, okay, I got to give me a girlfriend or a boyfriend.
Yeah, and I guess it's a big deal in New York in particular because it's just so cold out. You
exactly.
don't want to go
anywhere. Somebody,
so you need a boo for
just the winter months.
Like March comes,
4 months.
Basically someone with a Netflix subscription.
Absolutely. You got Netflix, Hulu, anything?
You busy the next 4 months?
You and I, we should be boyfriend, girlfriend for the next next 3 or 4 months. After that, we can go on about
this
our business.
This was never a thing when I was.
I know. It's the thing now because we didn't have Netflix.
You're going to get booed up this winter, Marquise? Is that what's going to happen?
I mean, you know.
It's not that cold in Nashville to get booed up.
You can still go out. Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. I've seen people that say, oh, cuffing season.
So it happens.
Grow up, people.
So it happens in like Indianapolis, but no further south than that.
See, cuffing season don't work for me because I'm a huge college football person, so yeah. I'm unavailable at certain points of my life. Like,
listen, don't cuff. Cuffing season is for like 18 and 15 to 21, maybe. After that, you're an adult.
And I definitely
it's relationships.
And I definitely called it cupping season.
Yeah, that's why I was like, well, what are you talking about?
Like, what, a cup? We don't wear cups no more,
I
man.
I did not mean
in sports.
To say that. I apologize to all people under the age of 30.
But no, everything is cyclical. Everything has its season. And just take for the Predators for instance. Everyone loves the Predators now, and rightfully so. But I think because every game is sold out now, every game you can't. It's hard to. It's like, you know, getting a ticket at a I don't know, Bon Jovi concert or Elton John concert when he's on his last tour. It's like the tickets are you can't get them because everybody's bought them up. And getting in the house is like, man, you must know somebody or paid a huge amount to get a ticket to get in to see Elton John because he's on his last tour. That's how it sort of is like the Nashville Predators right now. But it wasn't too long ago when they were not selling out places. You know, they were not selling out. It wasn't until 2017 that they basically sold out every home game. That's the first time they had sold out every home game, I think, starting in 2017. Yeah. That's because you could start to see the turn in the team.
Yeah.
And like we said, Nashville is all about a big party. It was a big party when the Titans were winning. Now, the Titans, they've done some things in that span where they kind of turned people off.
Well,
they didn't kind of build on what they had.
Yeah, there's no question that how you act as a franchise
exactly.
is
and
a
I think the
big
Predators,
part of this.
They,
no question.
I think the Predators saw that.
Yes.
And they said, you know what? If we do get to that point, we know what to do
moving forward.
So
I think demographics are number one.
So
demographics,
how you treat
your people,
your
fans.
Paying customer, your fans.
Those are the two biggest ones. And those are obvious ones that we've talked about on the show
for
years. I think there is another trait that's sort of like when you look at a college football coach and when he takes a job with a program. And I know everything in my life goes back to college football, whatever. It's just fit. The phrase fit always comes up, right? When we look at a coach, we're like, oh, the fit is perfect. He just fits there. Coach O at LSU, right? Like Dan Mullen at Florida, there's a fit. And we talk about fit. You can't measure it. You can't quantify it. You can't explain it. It's just a fit. Oh, it fits. And I think that so with Nashville, and I wonder about this, because hockey in the South is sort of counterculture, right? Like it's sort of like this indie rock thing. Right, we're not mainstream. We're kind of cool, and I wonder if soccer, because it's sort of indie rockish, it falls into that counterculture, like it's not mainstream. I think soccer will work because I think Nashville has a mainstream, like anti-mainstreamism. Am I wrong to think that Nashville at times, like it relishes the idea of being counterculture or indie rock? It's not a mainstream city. Like that's why hockey and soccer are going to be successful here and baseball and football aren't as successful. I mean, and everybody watches the Titans game,
yeah,
so I'm not.
But there's a reason why I think they chose to put these, let's just say soccer, for instance, now, put it right in Nashville, sort of the heart of Nashville, because it's not too far off the beaten path from downtown where they're going to put the stadium. It's accessible. You can get there from every direction just about.
But also like a cool area
exactly,
town where
cool
all the young,
area.
Cool, hip people hang
there's
out.
There's a reason why they chose to keep it here. And I think there's a reason why, you know, we talk about baseball and possibly putting it outside of the Nashville market, like putting it in Williamson County somewhere. It's all about demographic. It's easier to put it in Nashville because people are moving here. The demographic is getting
younger, more diverse.
And it's not just one. Even though one side does, there's more white people in Nashville than there are anybody. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But it start, but it's starting to be more diverse.
Yeah, no question.
Just Nashville. I'm not talking about the surrounding areas. I'm saying
Davidson County.
Davidson.
56% white, I think. Davidson
exactly.
County.
So,
and the other counties around Nashville are
higher.
Much, much higher, yes.
So you put it in Nashville, the demographic is more diverse. So you're going to get more people that like soccer, that can relate to soccer. There's a bigger group that relate more to soccer in the Nashville area than it is if they chose to put it out in Williamson County somewhere or Rutherford somewhere out there.
Yeah.
They want to keep it here because it's more diverse and people want it.
I know this sounds weird, but the other location for the Titans Stadium was up where up north where the Fontenelle thing used to be or whatever. I think that is I don't think it would have worked north because population trend didn't go north. Populations are Rutherford
away.
But
would have went north if the Titans was out there.
Probably so. I think the NFL actually plays better out in the burbs. I think the NFL does. I can't explain why I think this. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I think I'll explain. Here's the thing. I think Nashville is a counterculture indie rock sort of city when it comes to the party that they want to go to. And I'll explain what I mean by that when we come back, because I'm the guy showing up when it's not cool anymore. I'm always the guy, and I get to the place, and I'm like, oh, I thought this was the cool place to be, and like no one's there anymore. And that's my life experience. So I feel like soccer has a chance to be that counterculture. We'll continue this conversation. And if you want to chime in, we had people on Twitter already saying, listen, I think people, once they learn about soccer and they feel that it's so similar to hockey, that they'll understand the game more and they'll fall in love with it the way that we've fallen in love with hockey. I think there isn't some truth to that. So if you want to chime in, what do you think will make soccer work? Why do certain sports work in certain places? What is it about this market that is so unique that has led to either the Titans not latching on or the Predators latching on? We'll get into all that, and we'll continue to discuss and kick it around here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and subscribe today. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. And again, we'll just wrap up this conversation because, again, Derek Mason coming up, head football coach for your Vanderbilt Commodores. Huge statement coming out from Malcolm Turner yesterday. I'll read that for you here in just a second. But just to sort of wrap this up, again, you've said this all along, Derek, and I've said this as well. You know, Nashville loves a great party, but they will move on from that party very quickly if it doesn't feel like it's cool anymore. And I have no idea who decides what's cool or not. I've never.
Sure enough, it's not us.
Well, it might be you, man, but I've never, ever been asked. No one's ever asked me.
Hey, Braden, what's cool nowadays?
I have no idea. I listen to like singer-songwriter music now. My whole life is different than it was 10 years ago. But I know this because when I find out about a place and then I go to that place and there's nobody there, I know that it's uncool now, that people have moved on because I'm there. Like, I know that. And so I just think soccer is this other new thing that nobody, like, the reason all the fans have done, the supporters groups have done such a great job and the atmosphere at those stadiums is that soccer is like this new cool thing that everyone's going to go check out and try. I do think it hurts that they're not going to play in their own stadium for an extra year. I think that certainly hurts. But I think it's going to work because it's sort of counterculture a little bit. What's the opposite of big, snarling NFL CTE violence, right? Like, we all love football for violence. I'm a football guy. I love it because it's violent. But the counterculture to that, the counter pushback to that, is sort of this elegant, beautiful, soft game that is soccer, right? And I think once the people realize, and that's where it's different than hockey. Hockey still has that college football intensity and physicality. I wonder, do people still latch on to soccer the same way they latched on to hockey? Because it is very different from a physicality standpoint. But I think there's some counterculture to it, and I think that's also what will help it work.
Yeah, you know, I think there's enough young people that have grown up watching the counter to football, so to speak. Football possibly in their world, but, you know, they grew up watching football, the original football.
Football.
Not football.
What accent are you doing?
I don't know
okay.
What it is.
I wouldn't try it again.
Football.
Yeah, okay.
Let me
Last
stop
one.
With that
one.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. they've grown up watching this because, you know, whether it be, you know, kids watching the U.S. women's team and how popular they have been, or just watching, you know, soccer from a world standpoint, whether it's Messi or Ronaldo, one of these popular guys that have become more mainstream now.
Well, and in America,
kids follow them.
It's Christian Pulisic. I mean, exactly. If you are a, like, I have no reason to root for any EPL teams. Mm-hmm. I can't figure out for the life of me why Americans fall in love with a particular EPL team, which is the English Premier League.
Premier. What accent is that?
Premier.
What accent is that?
Great Britain. United Kingdom. The Premier. For the life of me, I can't figure out why people love a particular team. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of reasons, I guess, people give, but I can't figure it out. I will now be a Chelsea fan because I will tune in to watch Christian Pulisic. I think he's the greatest American soccer player I've ever seen. And because I want to see the United States do well, mm-hmm. I want to see him do well, and I'm glad that he is playing at the highest level in the world because that's going to make him better for our team.
Yeah, and people, because they've grown up watching soccer, like my generation grew up watching football and basketball, so we gravitate toward football and basketball. And sort of soccer is that, you know, that niche sport that, okay, if I like a player or if there's nothing on, I'll watch it. If it's exciting in my city, I'll watch it. I'll check it out. But for this, you know, for the Munson group, they grew up watching hockey, I mean soccer. And they will they have no problem gravitating towards soccer and wanting to go down to, you know, the new stadium or Nissan Stadium and watching the soccer game. Hell, the people in Atlanta tell you they love going to, you know, Mercedes-Benz and watching their soccer team.
So, but again, that's the thing. Why in Atlanta? Now, Atlanta's different because it's got this 9 million people mm-hmm. extended large demographic. But like the Falcons, like I don't feel like the Falcons have really some, like the Hawks.
You know what?
The Thrashers never worked.
Here's what it is.
The Braves had to move their stadium 3 times in 30 years. Like, I don't think sports resonates in Atlanta, but soccer has.
But it's just like what we say about Nashville. It's a party. Like, where's the hottest party? Okay, that's the hot party I'm going to. If however long it lasts, I am staying there. If the lights go out, I am cutting them out. That's me. Maybe it's like that in Atlanta. Because when Atlanta was hot, when the Falcons were hot, Deion Sanders and the Dirty Bird, people were going to games. People, you couldn't get enough of the Atlanta Falcons. But then when they hit their slump, people left.
Right.
And then when they went back to the Super Bowl again, you couldn't get enough of Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, and Julio Jones,
like,
and
I lived there,
everybody.
I lived there as a 10-year-old in 1991 and 92. Like,
the Braves when they were going to World Series. It was hot.
I went to the playoff games. Like, I went to the NLCS against the Pirates before they made the World Series. Mm-hmm. My dad took me as a 9-year-old. I was there. It was crazy. But they were the worst team in baseball, like, the year before.
Exactly.
And there was nobody there.
But it was a party now. And everybody loves them.
And it exploded. And again, winning, listen, maybe this equation is far more simple than we think. If you have an organization that cares about its fans, that works hard, if you have the right demographics that care about your sport, and your team wins, you're probably going to be successful.
There's not many.
But Nashville also, there's this other element to Nashville.
There's not many organizations like the Cleveland Browns, like the Dallas Cowboys, maybe the Yankees.
Packers are in
there. Packers, where even if you're losing.
Lakers.
Even if you're losing, even though the Lakers, when they started losing really bad, people started to walk away. Yeah. Those organizations, and Munson can attest to it because you watch games, there ain't nobody there. But you go to these games where these organizations are so entrenched into the fabric of the city that even if they're losing, they're coming. That's why I love playing in Cleveland. Because Cleveland was a dumpster fire. Maybe still be. There's still a dumpster fire. Maybe not a dumpster fire.
It's smoldering.
Smoldering. Yeah, it could become a dumpster fire again. But even with that.
I mean, a guy just tried to kill another guy.
Exactly. So. Even with that, they showed up. Like, Brown fans showed up.
Yeah.
Because this is what they do. They don't know anything else.
And college football in the South, too, in the SEC, although Penn State's trying to do its best SEC impersonation right now by sending death threats to the quarterback.
Yeah, that is just bad. We can talk about that.
It's terrible. It's very SEC of you, Penn State. I think that, you know, South Carolina is a good example of this. They have 80,000 people at their stadium every single game.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic atmosphere, fantastic fans, fantastic stadium, you know, Space Odyssey, 2001, all that stuff. And they don't give a damn thing to their fans. They've been to Atlanta one time since 1992, mm-hmm. since the division split. They've never won anything, ever, and yet those people show up. I have so much respect for those types of folks. And segueing this to Vanderbilt, because Derek Mason is going to join us when we come back. You know, this is my question about Vanderbilt fans. Like, you weren't exactly showing up before this team got bad this year. Mm-hmm. You had Keyshawn Vaughn, Kalijah Lipscomb, Jared Pinkney. You didn't know that Riley Neal in the quarterback situation was going to be bad. You had LSU and Georgia showing up in weeks 1 and 3, and you still didn't even support this team. So I think that is where there is a disconnect. I do not want to be disrespectful to the Vanderbilt fans who do love their team. Mm-hmm. I understand there are some of you out there, but it doesn't feel like you guys have supported this team before they got bad, because they're not a good football team right now. Mm-mm. But I didn't feel like there was a lot of support there before. And that's just an issue that James Franklin dealt with. That's an issue that everybody's going to deal with. And until Malcolm Turner and maybe the higher-ups at Vanderbilt decide to fix some of these problems, I'm not sure it's fair, as we talked about yesterday, to hold that against the coach. And according to Malcolm Turner, he agrees. Mm-hmm. This is his quote yesterday. "I want to make it clear, very clear, that Derek Mason will be our head football coach moving forward. Coach Mason has my full support, and I'm committed to working with him to ensure our football program has the necessary resources and support to succeed. We are in the midst of developing a new and robust athletic strategic plan with the vision to put the football program and all of our varsity sports in a position to win on and off the field of play. Coach Mason is committed to leading Vanderbilt football program the right way, and we will move forward in that spirit together." Joe Rexroth, I believe, asked him specifically, does that mean 2020? And Malcolm Turner said unequivocally yes. I'm paraphrasing there, but that means no question about it. Derek Mason's coming back. And we'll join him. We'll talk to that man when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, if you're listening to Marvin Gaye, that means that head football coach Derek Mason will be joining us shortly, because that Marvin Gaye music is for him. Let me remind you guys, before we get to Coach Mason here in just a minute, Preds fans, don't miss this Wednesday night, Smashville Live. That's this evening, featuring Nashville Predators, Mikhail Granlund, UC Saros. We will be in Cool Springs at Brewhouse South, and the start of the show, of course, 7 o'clock. Fans can come out and win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds game. A limited number of autographs and pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early. This Wednesday night, Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. I will be down there, of course, with Hal Gill. So
this is because Malcolm Turner says something really interesting toward the end of his sort of press conference or
statement.
Statement. He said
Twitter statement, by the way.
We talked about that. It's 2019. You can do that. He said, "We have had 50 years of routine kick the can coaching changes without accompanying the fundamental underlying changes," Turner told the newspaper. "And out of respect for those who truly support Vanderbilt football, with the focus on building a successful, sustainable football program, this is a cycle that we really need to break." And that's what we talked about yesterday.
Yep. Derek Mason, football coach for your Vanderbilt Commodores, joining us here on Morning Drive. And you hear the phrase, "ensure our football program has the necessary resources and support to succeed," Coach Mason. How does that make you feel?
Well, that's definitely, you know, been a huge step in the right direction. I mean, these young men, this program, like this university, you know, is a special place. These are special people. And I think it's not about, you know, Derek Mason. It's not about just trying to see, you know, man, a vision through. I think for the most part what it's about trying to, you know, resource student-athletes, you know, at this university, you know, at a higher level so that they can compete at a higher level. Because, again, in this conference, when you talk about the SEC, it's as good as any conference in the country, and as a lot of people would like to say, it is the best conference in the country. So we just want to be competitive, and I know you know people see it differently across the board, but you know what I know right now is that there is some commitment towards where we're trying to go. So let's get it.
Now, Coach, is this what you were talking about after the win versus Missouri, and your passionate sort of interview after the game when you spoke of, you know, not many say they want the job, but I'm built for the job? And then you see AD Turner say, "Listen, there's been so many years of people just kind of kicking a can down a road and saying, okay, we'll get to it. And now we need to get to it. And we are going to get to it with a guy that we know can get the job done if we put the necessary things in place for him to do his job the way he needs to, like the other teams do in the SEC.
Well, that's really what I was speaking to, not out of, you know, man, frustration,
exactly,
man, but just out of, you know, man, understanding, man, exactly, you know, man, where we're trying to go and what we're trying to do. You know, this conference has gotten better. I mean, it's – tell you what, man, we've had, you know, man, some successful coaches here. Bobby Johnson had a lot of success, you know, man, in his tenure. James Franklin, you know, did it as good as anybody. But, you know, what we know and understand is, you know, like the conference has changed in terms of where it's gone. Everybody, Missouri, Kentucky, you know, man, Arkansas, everybody has moved towards trying to make sure that they can resource, you know, like their programs. I mean, I've been down to Mississippi State and seen what they have. You've been to Ole Miss like this year to see what they've done. Everybody's moved their programs forward in terms of what it looks like, and you know, we're in that time and place where we can't afford to be behind. We have to make sure that we can be our best Vanderbilt. I'm not saying we got to be anybody else. I'm just saying, man, we got to do whatever we can to make sure, man, that we can move ourselves forward so that, you know, from a developmental standpoint of resources and just development, we can get our kids from where they are, our young people from where they are to where they want to be.
Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head football coach, joining us here on Morning Drive. And I think, you know, you've been here long enough to know, and you just talked about the SEC and the league itself. So when you got the job and you came to town, how differently do you sort of view the level of competition, just the stakes, you know, how this part of the country works, like all the things that maybe you sort of had to learn on the fly? How have you viewed all of that stuff, and how has it changed you and how you approach what you do every day?
Well, it's uber competitive. I mean, this is the most competitive conference I've ever been in. Okay, man. I mean, I've been coaching for a while. I mean, even in the NFL. I mean, I was in the NFC North, okay, and this rivals the NFC North just in terms of, you know, man, how guys get after it, you know, man, how these teams are built, okay, man, how they're resourced. I mean, in the NFL, everybody's playing on a level playing field. Every owner's got the same amount of money. Everybody's, you know, like going after they can go get who they want. You know, here, okay, man, you got to build it out. Okay, I mean, here at Vanderbilt, man, we build our recruiting differently, okay, and in terms of academic standards, you know, what we're looking for, man, who can really play in this conference, and then trying to develop that. So, to me, you know, when I look at this conference is as tough as any conference I've been in, you know, man, from top to bottom, they're competitive. I mean, even in a down year or in a down cycle for teams, they can still compete at a high level, man, because of the volume of players. So, you know, you got to make sure, man, that you're keeping up, okay, man, and you're working hard to stay with it, because it's not just X's and O's. It's truly Jimmy's and Joe's and really how those teams are being developed over time.
Now, Coach, these young men are not immune to what's being said, you know, from the outside. They're not immune to, you know, what's being said on social media. They all pretty much got social media accounts, so they see, they hear, they go to class. People are asking them questions, you know, what's happening with the season? What's going to happen with Coach Mason? So they're hearing all of this. Your job is to try to, once they walk in that building, try to, hey, leave all that stuff at the door. This is our team. We need to do what we need to do to win a ball game. Do you think that now that they know that, okay, our coach is back, we don't need to worry about that. People are still going to ask the question, but we know our coach is back for next year. Do you think that sort of gives them a shot of energy for the remainder two games?
Well, I think any distraction or anything that, you know, man, comes out nowadays, regardless of how much you try to shield them from it or what you talk about, man, they feel it, they see it, and it does affect them. I mean, they're 18 or 22, 23 years old. You know, so for them, you know, any confirmation of, you know, man, consistency, I believe, you know, man, it does give them a shot in the arm. I think it does, you know, weigh on them because parents are asking. Mm-hmm. You know, people think it's just a student athlete's looking at, but it's not. It's parents. I mean, I've had phone calls from parents. Hey, you know, man, how's everything going? You know, man, are you gonna be all right? Listen, I say, listen, your son is doing fine. Let's continue to keep grinding. It's about staying in the middle. It's definitely about, you know, man, walking that line, you know, with our guys, about being truthful, man, but really not diving into that, understanding that we got a game to play this week versus ETSU. But, you know, man, for these guys, when I looked in their faces, you know, yesterday morning, okay, man, I didn't see anything, man, that led me to believe that these guys were checked out or gone someplace. And when I came in this morning, these guys were ready to get to work. So I think their attitude has been workmanlike, man. We just got to make sure, man, that we put them in a position to be successful on Saturday.
Coach Derek Mason joining us here from Vanderbilt. You talked a lot about the quarterback position in your post-game press conference there following the loss to Kentucky. You've played against a mid-major team and played poorly against UNLV, admittedly. Yep. So, and then you came back and you won a great game against Missouri. You have two games left on your schedule, one of which is going to be a big-time rivalry game that you guys have been very successful in, that's going to, you know, it's a big game for both sides. But this is an opportunity to win a football game at home here in your final home game. Sort of take us through what you want to see from your team against ETSU, in particular at the quarterback position, for a lot of these guys, last sort of showcase in front of the home fans.
Well, first of all, man, it's senior night. I've got 20 seniors that we're going to honor. And, you know, obviously, you know, Turner Cockrell is always with us. I mean, man, he's with us. He's watching. And so we're going to, you know, man, play to the best of our abilities, man, to make sure that we can honor, you know, him and his family. But, you know, man, for these guys, you know, man, it's our last home game. So I think our guys are focused and locked in on what this game is. You know, man, it'll be their last time playing in this stadium. So, you know, that'll be emotional, man. But they got to get past the emotion a wave, okay, man, and make sure, man, that we focus on the task at hand, which is for the quarterback in this team playing a 60-minute ball game. We got to play a 60-minute ball game. We got to let it out from the kickoff, you know, to first quarter, second quarter, coming out of halftime, okay, man, because, you know, for us, man, we've had some fair struggles coming out of halftime and being able to, you know, man, be consistent about, you know, man, hitting the throttle and playing defense and offense. This has got to be, you know, man, our best game yet. Man, there's an opportunity, you know, man, for that to happen. You know, I'm looking for these guys to go out there and play well. Man, they know what's at stake. Okay, it's an opportunity, man, to play their last home game here, man, get a victory. And I really don't care who it's against. It's about the opportunity, and it's about us, you know, man, being our best selves. So here we go.
Well, I want to implore the fans to, you know, if you say you love Vanderbilt and you love Vanderbilt football and you love Coach Mason, show up senior night. These guys it's their last home game. Show up for them, for the coach, for this team, and make it a loud place to play this weekend. But even in the midst of this season, and you spoke of all the things that you want to get right and things the teams have been struggling at, what is one area that you can look to and say, okay, this team has done this well? Has it been their resiliency, even in the midst of a poor season, to week in and week out go to work and work as if they are a 10-0 team?
Well, there are a couple of things that you ask about, man, that I'd like to address. First of all, it's the idea, man, that this group is resilient. You know, it's not easy in the midst of a lot of noise, okay, like for anybody, but it's a life lesson for these young men to understand that life sometimes is going to present you with some issues and some problems. And what you got to do when you get knocked down is get back up, dust your pants off, man, and just keep going. Because, you know, man, believe me, that's what adults do. That's what grown people do. And so, like, for them, I mean, it's just knowledge and growth. You know, when you talk about, you know, like, supporting these players, that's exactly what it's about. Okay, man, you don't have to like Derek Mason. You don't have to, you know, like, care for his X's and O's. You don't have to care about, you know, man, who he is, man. But, I mean, man, if you're a Commodore fan at all, man, you should care about these student-athletes. Okay, man, they're Commodores. They're Vanderbilt men. Okay, man, they've walked these halls. They've gone to these, you know, man, classes, been in these classrooms. And, you know, man, these young men are playing their last game, and they're getting ready to graduate and leave Vanderbilt. And you know what? That experience and what they see and what they feel, okay, man, it goes a long way towards these young men coming back and being able to give back to this place because they felt the love during the time that they were here.
Derek Mason, thank you so much, Coach. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
All right, thank you. Anchor down.
Yep. Absolutely. Derek Mason there, fresh off a very positive message from his athletic director yesterday. Yeah. So when we come back, did Vanderbilt make the right move? Is Malcolm Turner... did he say the right things? Did you hear something yesterday that makes you think that Vanderbilt can change? We'll do that when we come back. Some playoff rankings as well. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link Studios, Mount Juliet, powered by RumbleOn.com.
I swear, I mean, things that when you do radio, either on a podcast or, you know,
the internet.
The internet, yeah. Or... you know, on satellite radio. The things you could talk about, man, it's glorious. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Oh, man. Yeah, I wish I could bring up all the names of the things that we were just listening to and talking about during
so
the commercial
break. It would make you think, though.
Any stick to sports quality there?
Now, I think we could kind of turn it around.
Do you think the mom nude question is one that we could
ask? Yeah, that one we can use in stick to sports.
All right, tune in to Stick to Sports. We will have the most controversial stick to sports question we've ever had.
Exactly.
Delivered by me.
Delivered by Munson. I'm going to write it for Munson and make him read it because I don't want to read it on the air. We're just going to rip off this question from somebody else and put it up there. All right. So did Vanderbilt make the right decision here? And listen, I think you read some really important quotes there. And if you want to reiterate what he had to say, Malcolm Turner, the athletic director, and in his statement yesterday, he said a few things. I am committed to working with Derek Mason to make sure that our football program has the necessary resources and support to succeed. That, to me, screams all the things that Derek Mason has been asking for years. Frankly, I think this is separate from Derek Mason. It's all the things that Vanderbilt fans and non-Vanderbilt fans have been asking of Vanderbilt for the longest period of time. As a college football fan, I want to see Vanderbilt do well. Mm-hmm. Even though my alma mater is a rival, I don't care. I want to see Vanderbilt do well because it's my city. But the fans need to show up. The team needs to be better. The coach has to be good. But more importantly, you got to get players. And the way you get players is spending money.
Exactly. And this was a sort of A.D. Turner's sort of his last sort of message during that whole Twitter thing and talking to the newspaper, the Tennessean. He said, we have had 50 years of routine kick-the-can coaching changes without accompanying the fundamental underlying changes. Turner told the newspaper, and out of respect for those who truly support Vanderbilt football, with a focus on building a successful and sustainable, key word, successful and sustainable football program, this is a cycle that we really need to break. He is exactly right. It's just year after year. Let's make a culture change. Get somebody like Franklin. Franklin doesn't come along but once, maybe, at a university like Vanderbilt. You had him. He did his stint, and he left to get a bigger job. Because why? Because you didn't do the things that A.D. Turner is talking about. You didn't, you didn't invest into the program so it can be sustainable, successful. Yes, it's good to have success in a vacuum, but how do we get that to be sustainable? Well, in order to get it to be sustainable, we got to invest in it. How do you get your kids to be, upstanding, smart, intelligent, good people? You don't just, tell them one thing and then go about your business. No, what you do is you invest in them. You invest time, you invest words, you put them in programs, you give them all the necessary tools to be successful. And we all kind of see at the end, we reap what we sow. A lot of times with our children, you will understand it, Braden, as your children start to get older.
I saw it, terrified.
From my two children with the help, the bulk of it came from their mom. But we invest in their lives, and now it's looking a certain way. Well, Vanderbilt, if you want your program to look a certain way, you got to invest in it. You can't just be happy with a 3-year run and then say, oh, we had it. Let's just find another coach like Franklin. You're not going to find him. So invest in who you have in the program, and maybe he will turn out to be the Franklin.
I also think this isn't happening overnight.
Yes, it's not.
You don't just hire a guy and all of the problems disappear. You don't just announce as an AD that you're going to invest in football and then it happens overnight. It takes time to build things and to plan things and to get the coaching staff right. And listen, Derek Mason, the football coach, has to also do a better job in this. Mm-hmm. He's got to prove that he is worth the investment. And, beating ETSU is a good start, right? Mm-hmm. You better go out and win this weekend against ETSU. Historically, though, I think context is very important. And James Franklin, obviously, was very successful at Vanderbilt. He had three seasons, 2 9-win seasons. Three of them was 6 wins. So I was looking at this yesterday. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt, in the history of its program, has probably had more 6-win seasons than you think. 43 mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. 43 6-win seasons. The problem is that all but about 7 or 8 of them happened before 1955. So we're talking World War II, you know, back in the 40s, 30s,
when they were on like
1908.
Teams.
I mean, we're talking pre-World War I seasons and like all this other stuff. So let's say from 55 to today, there's been like 8 seasons of 6 wins or more. And Derek Mason has 2 of them. Only 2 coaches in Vanderbilt history have ever gone to more than 1 bowl game. James Franklin and Derek Mason. So, again, I know there are more bowl games today than there's ever been in the past, and I understand that. But if you talk modern football, basically since integration until today, Vanderbilt had a nice season under Bobby Johnson in 2008. They had a 6-win season in 1982. They had one in 74 and one in 75. And that's mm-hmm. it. And then 2 with Derek Mason when he got to bowl games and got to 6-6.
Okay. Here is the – because here's what's going to be the ultimate question, I believe. And there are a lot of things that are going to be asked of Derek Mason after the season and AD Malcolm Turner. But here's the one question that I would love to get clarification on, and we talked about it. Okay, now you've given this statement, Malcolm Turner, AD, and it's great for Derek Mason. It is truly great for Derek Mason, and it's equally as great or even greater for the program and the kids that are going to come after the kids now that are playing, or even the kids that have 2 or 3 more years left. It's great for them because now they will hopefully see change. Let me legitimate, sustainable change. So here's the question. Will you now start the clock over with Derek Mason?
I think that's the interesting debate.
Because what you're saying is you really didn't give him the opportunity because your statement says it's been kicked down the road.
Right, and
we're going to change. So,
but it takes like
first
3 years.
Exactly. His first 5 years, you haven't given him that. Well, hell, his first 6 years, you haven't given him that.
Yeah.
So now that you publicly have said this, you've said he is our coach for 2020. Are you going to now give him, whether it be 2 years or 3 years, to now see change?
That, because it does take 3 or 4 years to actually invest financially and build facilities, right?
Exactly.
Like you can't just like snap your fingers and all of a sudden have like a 5-star resort over there on West End that, mm-hmm. that players want to come live in. You know, player facilities take time to build and plan, and they're working on that, and that's going to take time. It's not like all of a sudden by the end of 2020 that all that stuff's going to be fixed and they're recruiting better players again. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to take time for that. But I think this is where Derek Mason has to have some control and have some. He has agency in this.
Mm-hmm.
And next season, whether it's moving on from a defensive coordinator or changing the offense or finding a new quarterback, whatever it may be, there has to be progress by the coach next year.
Mm-hmm.
And by the program itself, that independent of the fan support, independent of the financial support, the facilities, you also have to show some progress on the field. And now, I personally, again, if you cycle up every 3 years and go to a bowl game every third year at Vanderbilt, right now with the level of resources they have, which is what Derek Mason has done, I think that's okay. But there also has to be some proof of concept that what you're doing is going to actually work when you do have more resources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been bad this year. Mm-hmm. There's no way to put lipstick on that pig. And if they finish 3-9 with a win over ETSU and a loss to Tennessee, there has to be progress in 2020. So I think he has agency in this as well. But you're right, it's going to take 3 or 4 years to actually see all this, you know, commitment mm-hmm. from the university before it actually starts paying off. And so is Derek Mason still going to be around when all that stuff starts to pay off? Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Malcolm Turner is making a 1-year decision or if he's making a 5-year decision, we don't know. And Derek Mason can help in that.
Exactly.
Because he can go out and win a couple games next year that he's not supposed to, like Missouri this year.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, there's no question he comes back in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to have some agency in this as well. I've teased college football playoff rankings like 1,000 times. We will eventually get to them. But you have a dissection coming up after the break because the Titans did not play. It is mm-hmm. not about Ryan Tannehill. It is about Nick Foles, who will take on the Titans this weekend and who returned to the lineup last week for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Last year, too.
Throwing the ball 47 times in a loss to the Colts. A Nick Foles dissection when we return. Morning Drive.